You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here in Bogota, Colombia, and this week we're going to talk with Matt Aaron. Matt is an American here in Colombia. And have you ever really wondered about the mystery that is the panela here? So there's bricks or sort of sugar, I guess. I mean, we're going to find out more about panela with Matt, because this guy, you know, is this young American guy from Maryland who, after a while sort of working for NGOs and other things, ended up here in Colombia and decided to live his life healthily. So not only is he living healthily, but also he is sourcing panela to create a panela sort of mix to mix with fruit juices. So it's like a natural, 100% organic energy drink. Now, you know, we at Columbia Calling think this is pretty awesome that someone's down here doing this sort of thing. So we'll be talking to Matt Aaron a little bit about the situation here in Colombia, about setting up a business, and about how he fell into this business, which I think is just a fascinating thing to happen. You know, someone who's got really no background in this whatsoever has started his own company. So you can check that out on panelamix.com. And also, he's got another website called Valor Foods, so valorfoods.com, where he can source you any sort of tropical food out of the jungle here in Colombia and in Peru. So we'll be talking to Matt Aaron about that later on in the show. Matt was put onto Columbia Calling by another friend of ours, that's another Matt indeed, Matt Rhines, who was on the show several months ago because he was opening up his own restaurant called The American Kitchen in a sort of suburb of Bogota called Cota. Now, this venture is going incredibly well indeed, I'm pleased to report. And of course, the two friends spoke and they said that, you know, Matt Aaron would be a good person on the show. So here's hoping that we have an informative and interesting conversation, as always, with Matt Aaron on the show about other procedures. So we'll be I'm going to be working on a lot of writing in the coming months, and of course we'll start promoting that in, I think, January next year. There's quite an exciting project on the on the horizon for Richard McCall, that's me. So keep abreast of what I'm doing, and if you want a little laugh, please have a read of the city paper. That's thecitypaperbogota.com. The editor, Richard, was on the show, Richard Emlyn, one of the first interviewees we had, but I managed to write him an editorial about my 12 halcyon days in the public sector here in Colombia. So if you want to see a little bit about what was going through my head and what was going past my cubicle in those 12 days, read that. I've kind of become a little bit of a laughing point here in Colombia on it, and that's fine. Self-deprecating humor is great. Another big news here in Colombia is we've started to get real British cider. Now, for those of you out there who like cider, that is something. That's a step forward. Now, there's the Great British Cider Company, which is now importing cider, Aspel cider, here into Colombia. I was happy to go to their launch party at the Monkey Pub House in Bogota, and the cider, let me tell you, it was phenomenal. I can just imagine taking several bottles or crates or gallons and up to Mompox over Christmas in the heat up in Mompox, where it's between 28 and 32 degrees anytime, and just supping on that ice cold in my garden as the birds flit overhead and the bird song is the only noise that I hear. So the idea is that we're getting cider, and we'll end up getting to talk with the people from the Great British Cider Company about this venture, because it's pretty exciting. Anyway, as always, please get in touch. I've been getting some nice emails from those of you out there listening, and they've been asking for recommendations about what to do in Colombia, what to do in Bogota. So I'm always happy to respond. I may not respond, straight away, quite busy, but equally, columbiacalling@gmail.com or through the website columbiacallingradio.com, and of course our Twitter handle, that's @columbiacalling. So we'll be going to take a short break right now, and we'll be back with Matt Aaron and his companies. So please don't go away. This promises to be an interesting conversation. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Stay tuned. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. And this week, like every week, we have a very special guest on the show. His name is Matt Aaron. He's from the United States, from Maryland, which makes him the first person from Maryland on Columbia Calling. And we're here, you know, talking to him because he's an interesting guy. At the fresh young age of 30, he's basically a startup entrepreneur here in, I would go to say, it's like the health food market. So you came, Matt, welcome on the show. Let's just quickly dive into this. How does a guy from Maryland end up in Columbia?
Well, first off, thanks for having me. So how did I get here? You know, I came here on a whim. I don't think it was a planned decision to move here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 5 years later, I'm still here. But I came here with the idea. I was a little bit bored. I was actually living in a suburb of Maryland called Columbia, Maryland.
Okay.
No joke. And I found an opportunity to write as a blogger for Actions Without Borders. Mm-hmm. So my premise was that I've seen a lot of voluntourism, right, where people pay to become volunteers, but it's become such an industry. And I found it strange, you know, pretty much a lot of people I'd met and acquaintances, etc., they all paid to go study in India, Dominican Republic, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
I mean volunteer.
Volunteer, yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, so I was like, well, what about just going there without speaking any Spanish and seeing if I can find a volunteer project on my own? So I came down here writing a blog about my experiences. I lived in Bogota, and I ended up volunteering, teaching English for two children's foundations. Mm-hmm. One was the Children's Foundation in La Calera, which is, you know, in the mountains, I guess.
Just stuck onto the side of Bogota, more or less.
Yeah. And another was a foundation, La Mesa, and one of them, was really teaching English. The other was more focused on fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fundraising was tough because the big crux for the Children's Foundation that I did fundraising for was we could not get a U.S. bank account for PayPal donations. And at the time, in Colombia, you could only send money, but you couldn't receive money. Mm-hmm. So we raised no money. At the other place, I enjoyed teaching English to kids. I can't say that they learned a ton of English, but I enjoyed writing about it. And for about 2 years after that, every month, I would get someone randomly that would find me online, and they would be looking for a volunteer project. So, you know, maybe half of them would be serious about it, and most of them I was able to at least put in touch and give them an idea of where to volunteer.
So tell me something, you know, because volunteering is always a sort of a tricky subject in Colombia, because, I mean, technically speaking, you're not allowed to volunteer in Colombia. I mean, technically speaking.
I didn't know that.
Well, you know, I think that might have been lifted slightly, but it's not something that's advertised. If you said you were going to come down to volunteer, I imagine that it has something to do with sort of leftist-inspired students from the 1960s, you know, teaming up with one or two of the guerrilla groups or something like that. So Colombia has always been sort of a bit more wary about, you know, let's say, do-gooders, between inverted commas, coming down and getting wrapped up in it all. And of course, the greatest poster girl for that at the moment is Tanya Niemeyer, the Dutch fuck gorilla. But let's move on from her. But I just want to say, what kind of advice would you have to people wanting to come down and volunteer in Colombia? Where would you point them? Are there better companies, or should they just come down on a whim, or should they? I mean, what could you say to them? Because I know there's a lot of people, you know, Colombia makes the news for all the wrong reasons, and so a lot of people want to lend their expertise. They want to come down and you know, give something back. So, I mean, in that circumstance, what would you say, let's say, to another young man from Maryland?
Well, here's what I'd say, and let's just say that this is not a very, like, you know, someone who has, like, two master's degrees in, like, conflict intervention, but just a normal Joe like myself who doesn't, you know too much about volunteering, doesn't speak much Spanish, I would still recommend the route I took, coming down here and finding something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your goal is to have an experience and maybe contribute something,
yeah.
If your goal is for building a resume, then yeah, maybe you should do it beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Also, maybe if you're on a time constraint, you should probably also find it from out of the country. Mm-hmm. But what you'll find is, I think the majority of organizations, especially the ones that aren't going to charge you, they're not so up on email and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing that I discovered after I got here is a organization called Woofing.
Yeah.
The organic farming.
Something on organic farms or whatever it's called.
We'll find that acronym on Google and find the website.
Sorry.
But that seems really cool. I met people that have had great experiences around Bogota, near Medellin, other parts of the world.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. To be able to volunteer. The actual term escapes me completely at this moment when I need it, but I know it's volunteers on organic farms and so on. And it's all over the place. I know some people have done it in Uruguay and elsewhere, but I mean, that sounds great. But is there a website that you would send people to, you know, as the best resource, aside from Actions Without Borders?
You know, okay, I have a very eccentric view on a lot of things. I would say one charity that I'm involved with now only by donations is called Kiva.
Mm-hmm.
And have you heard of Kiva?
I don't know anything about Kiva.
And I would recommend to become a Kiva Fellow. So what is Kiva? Kiva is based on Muhammad Yunus, who is a Nobel Prize winner from Bangladesh, who had the idea that, you know, most people that live on a dollar a day, they cannot get a loan from an actual bank. You know, mm-hmm. It's like a loan shark where it's 50% interest. And so he actually created a profitable for-profit bank in Bangladesh, giving very, very small microloans.
Hmm.
Kiva took his model, and it's not for-profit, it's a non-profit, but you can go on this website and find people all over the world and give them, you know, $25 to, you know, $200 loans, and it's interest-free, so it is, you are donating, but they mm-hmm. pay you back. And because of this model that they have, it's a brilliant microfinance model, the payment rate is like 99.4%, the repayment rate.
Yeah.
So it really works, and it's like a way for banking to work. And I think that's the coolest way, because I'm a little bit more against, in general, I'd say, aid.
Yeah.
In the sense that you find people that really want it and let them learn.
Mm. That's interesting, that Kiva. Now, I might actually have heard of it, because you've sort of spurred my memory in a second, and jolted it. And I think there was an American lady who stayed in my hotel who was going up to Barranquilla to visit something that she had loaned money to, you know, for. And I think it was just like starting up a tiny village shop, you know, in a small, humble barrio of Barranquilla, and she was making the effort to go and check it out. You know, she was inevitably coming to Colombia for her own travel and her own desires down here, but the part of it was going to be that trip. And if she, either she'd been or she was going, but I just recall her, you know, her being really enthused, you know, really emotionally involved in this. So that's got to be a good thing. Now, okay, so we've got past this. You were here from 2009. And then you became like a freelance specialist in search engine operations, SEO.
I've been that since I was like 20.
This is your background. This is your field. This is from the University of Maryland. This is you know what you did. Well, I mean, obviously you didn't do that, but you did stuff that would relate to this kind of thing. So you were here in Colombia. Just give us a little bit of a background. What SEO kind of standards were like when you started out doing that here in Colombia?
Okay, and just to note, I basically was living here but doing SEO for clients in the U.S.
Okay.
But let me tell you about the standards, because I did get a couple of proposals and worked on a few small projects. And SEO at the time, you know, there's SEO, which is, for listeners who don't know, is, you know, the free results. They call them the organic search results. Mm-hmm. And then there's AdWords, which they call, you know, SEM, which are the paid results. We pay every time someone clicks on your mm-hmm. ad. And for SEO, there was a lot of basic things you could do to get a website to rank very highly. But when I remember talking to people about AdWords, which is the paid search, and I found that even some pretty prominent universities, you know, their monthly budget was only $50, $60. So it's still really wide open. And depending on what you're doing, it can be a really, really great opportunity.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. So, I mean, and of course, this has helped you today because you've set up your own business. Now, from 2012, this is why we're here talking, really, you know, not just a nice background about Matt Aaron, but while we're here, you've got your own company called Valor Foods, and this is, you know, a health food company that you're looking to export, but you're also doing well here with the domestic market in Colombia. I mean, I imagine just setting up, you know how to do it, obviously. Your website is very clear, it's very professional. And I imagine if I was to look up Health Foods Colombia, you would come up in a Google search pretty high. Let's hope. Let's hope.
You know, as ironic as it sounds, I haven't checked. I haven't focused at all on SEO.
That's too funny.
But I remember, I don't do it anymore. When I used to do freelance consulting in the U.S., because I was Matt Aaron. And there was like a Matt Aaron that had like a radio show, a famous Christian radio show, and then the guy that interviewed celebrities. There was like a small-time movie director, but I always had to make sure when you search for Matt Aaron that I was the first one to come up, because I could not, it's not that common of a name, so I had to be number one. I wasn't like Jennifer Lopez or something.
So you got a Christian, some Christian radio station,
the Matt Aaron show,
Matt Aaron show, which I don't know. Well, I think the other Richard McCall is a ceramicist in Santa Barbara, California. Yes, I have googled my name. But and he comes up pretty high, you know. It's me, it's between me and him.
Well, he does great work.
Yeah, well, obviously. And actually, we're now both on LinkedIn. We're connected just because of the names. And so if I'm ever in Santa Barbara, I will look him up. Equally, if he's ever in Bogota, we'll get in touch for our namesakes. But so listen, now you set this up. I guess it was 2010. You decided you were on a decided just to live your life healthily. And this inspired you to start sourcing natural products here in Colombia and in Peru, because it's on your website. Just tell us a little bit about how this came about.
Sure. And it wasn't like a...
It was an epiphany, was it?
I don't know if you call it an epiphany. I'd have to have more success for it, you know, for it to be an epiphany. But the idea is, you know, I really just started trying a lot of health foods in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first thing I looked at was the coca leaf.
Yeah.
And I just thought, man, I started reading everything I could in English and Spanish, even, you know, old books about the coca leaf, the history of Coca-Cola and how it's related to the coca leaf. You know, all of, if you buy coca tea here, on at least half of the boxes, it's going to say, inspired by a study in 1975 in Harvard.
Mm.
And so I was like, wow, you know, this is crazy. That the study from 1975 said that, you know, 100 grams chewing, which is a lot, it doesn't taste that good, but gives you all of, like, your RDA requirements for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started looking around, but I couldn't find it. And I ended up having a friend who went to Harvard that found it in some database. Well, it's not like out there. It's not
way deep.
It's like way deep, right? Because as you know, it's a huge political thing.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that doesn't work. I still love the coca leaf.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, I don't see anything I can do commercially with it.
But you wanted to export coca tea. That was the original
plan? Coca tea grounded into capsules so people take them for energy.
Oh, right. So, I mean, just like a health tablet almost.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, this was your idea. And you'd already produced them? Because the things to produce here are not, it's not difficult. We've got everything here. But had you done it? No, you were still...
Yeah, well, I had a supplier.
Okay.
And I had I designed the label, but I never actually put the prototype and sent it to the U.S. because, yeah, it's really, really difficult.
Well, I can only imagine. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion in this part of the world, let's say the Southern Hemisphere, about the legalization of these of drugs and narcotics. But we're not even discussing that when we're discussing the coca.
Nothing to do with drugs.
We're talking about the, you know, the natural leaf on the tree of an ancient, you know, medicine that has been, you know, revered and worshipped for millennia. I mean, that's the reality of it. And you wanted to take this and you know, make people's lives benefit from it up in the U.S. But I guess you were barricaded at every turn for that one, I think.
Yeah, I haven't found a solution there.
But you will. I mean, you will. I mean, it's these things take time, you know. This... You know, it was a big sigh. You know, I don't know how to say it because it is a natural product. You know, and the world is, I guess, diets are moving towards natural and organic, or if they haven't already moved, and the realization that this is the way forward is very much present. But there's a political ill will or political negativity to anything to do with. I mean, you just have to have that word coca. If it's not Coca-Cola, then it's bad, isn't it? I mean, that's about it. So it's going to be... I mean, that must have been a pretty uphill struggle. Quite disheartening as your first kind of, let's say, project.
Yeah, yeah. But that was cool. I learned a decent amount in that. And, you know, from there, I moved on to going to a indigenous Peruvian store, which I think you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And buying all these, like, Peruvian ingredients that were strange. And because I went there first to buy my coca tea. And just so you know, coca tea here, if you want to sell coca tea products like as a supplier, you have to have some part like indigenous.
Oh, really?
As far as I understand.
I didn't know that.
They were like a tax-free startup, and it was a Peruvian indigenous and a Colombian girl from Bogota.
Cool.
Anyway, so I came across camu camu, which is an Amazonic fruit. It actually grows just as much as Colombia as in Peru, but it grows on the Amazon River, you know, on the bank, and it's submerged underwater for 9 months out of the year.
Wow.
It looks like a little berry, and it has more vitamin C than any food in the world, as far as I know.
This is amazing. We're going to take a short break, because we're going to come back to that, because I think that's an incredible point about that, about the vitamin C and the things, you know, that are out there that are, you know, pre-existing, before we made vitamin tablets and everything else. So this is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're talking to Matt Aaron, and we'll be right back continuing this conversation about his Vala Foods company. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here with Matt Aaron from Maryland, who has just started talking about this natural fruit, the camu camu, mega rich in vitamin C. And you discovered this down there. Did you discover this in an indigenous store down here in Bogota, or is it something that which is you know like a naturalist store, but really a very important naturalist store, because it's right here in Chapinero. So the camu camu. Now, so what are you doing? What does this fruit look like? You say it's submerged underwater for 9 months of the year. How long does it take to grow? You don't know. That's all right.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's 9 months of the year. It's underwater. But what does it look? I mean, you said
it's a perennial. It blooms every year.
Okay.
And it looks like a. I was going to show you a picture, but it looks like a very small cherry, but it's kind of like blackish red.
Okay, it's not an acai or anything like that, no? It's not,
no.
Nothing along those lines.
No, it doesn't look like acai.
Okay.
It just comes from a palm.
Okay.
And, yeah, I mean, it's a very, like, very, very rough taste. I really like a lot of, like, bitter things. Most people have to add certain things when they make camu camu juice, which you actually get here in Bogota at Wok.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Ah, that's right.
Camu Wok. They also have camu camu ice cream. But I sometimes buy the pulp directly here just to make my own juice in the house. And so I ended up putting that on Amazon. I launched a brand called Mama Kamu.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been selling that on Amazon ever since.
And is it selling well?
Yeah, it's selling. It's, you know, it's not like a superstar, but it's steady. And it gives me like a nice like small like monthly income.
Uh-huh.
I'd say looking back at it, like Kamu Kamu, I was right. I was telling people at the time, you know. Like, camu camu is going to boom. Like, this is going to be the next superfood. And sure enough, it did. What I've come to realize is that if I had known what I know now, which I'd say maybe more advanced beginner than I was before, like things with packaging and logistics and sourcing, et cetera, I could have made something happen with camu camu, because it's definitely going up and up and up. And at this point, I'm just kind of riding the wave, but I don't have an amazing product marketing. Like, the quality of my product is very good, but the marketing is pretty mediocre.
But this is where your SEO expertise should come in, and you're pushing it up there and getting it first in Google. And
so what I did is, I'll tell you what I did, for a ton, and this is Google, so you know Google updates their algorithm all the time.
Yes.
But what I found with a buddy of mine who lives in Thailand is that, you know, and most of my SEO work has actually been clean. They call it white hat, which is just buy the book stuff. But you do things that are against Google rules, which are just getting fake pages and links. And what I found was that Amazon pages, Amazon product pages, because it has the trust of Amazon.com, you have a little bit more leeway. So we just put a bunch of crazy links, the Mama Kamu Amazon LinkedIn, and we ended up becoming number two for Kamu Kamu behind about.com for a little bit, and then we fell off.
All right, well, they found you out.
They found us out, yeah. But in any event, I think I've learned a lot, and SEO is, for what I'm doing, I'm looking more towards just the quality of the product than just ranking higher in Google.
Of course. Why not? You're making the sale. Now, listen, you know, setting up a business here in Colombia is not the most straightforward venture that you could do, and certainly I don't know, you know, when you're sort of sourcing ingredients and sourcing products, how this goes. I mean, and you're sourcing stuff and you're receiving stuff product from Peru, but you live here in Bogota. How easy has that been?
You know, when I first started out, I launched Mama Kamu without ever going to Peru, and, you know, sending Western Union money to these guys. And they were actually decent people. You know, they sent me the product, but they weren't very good businessmen, and it was hard to get in touch with them. So I ended up having to go down to Peru and find a better supplier and establish a relationship with them. You know, it's really difficult. I'd say for sourcing, I'm not an expert in sourcing, but what I've learned is you have to be really, really on top of an ingredient, especially selling to the U.S. You have to make sure all of the quality control and if they're organic, all those certifications lined up, translated, making sure that you have your delivery times down pat. Mm. So sourcing is something at this point where I'm doing a very, very small level, but I've narrowed down one or two ingredients where there might be some potential.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, like, Richard, you know, I came from kind of SEO web stuff. I kind of threw myself in the fire here.
Yeah.
I've tried a ton of things. We don't have time to cover all the things I've tried. But you know, yeah, sourcing is quite difficult. And with regards to launching the Colombian business, which we launched last year, when I was sourcing, I would just import into the U.S. and sell it to them from my U.S. business.
Yeah.
But we launched Valor Foods Colombia last year.
Yes.
Late last year. And, you know, it's been a learning experience, but on a funny anecdote, when I first got here in 2010, I got mixed up with, like, a really dishonest but powerful lawyer from Los Andes.
Oh, yeah?
And I set up this, like, fake company. It was only a company designed to get me a business visa, and it just created more problems. And I never did anything with the company, but just I learned how to pay taxes on a company that didn't exist, and that was even a challenge. So I kind of knew what I was getting into. You know, there's certain things like factura, cuenta de cobra, remisión, like all these different things that there's like three different words for a bill, and there's different ways to, you know, for invoice, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And just learning those terms has been uphill.
Yes.
Like, I feel like I've passed like level one, but I have way more to go.
I now have an accountant because I can't keep up with all the changes. There's too many changes, I think. Every time they look around, they're sliding another tax at me. So, I don't know. So, I've now got an accountant. Because I think I got to level one and then decided that's where I'll stay.
Yeah.
So, it's all right. So, yeah, no, God. So, a cutthroat lawyer from a prestigious university.
Yeah.
Sort of, what to be expected from these prestigious universities? I don't know. And then, now, Valor Foods, it's going well, though. I mean, you'd say it's growing. It's something you've got to, you see a future with this.
Yeah, I'd see a future with it. It's growing. You know, we just launched our focus product is Panela Mix.
Okay.
And we launched that here in Bogota 4 months ago now. And we're also going to launch it in the U.S. And yeah, that's been another tough project, just like anything, and a lot of it just because I'm a beginner.
Mm.
But I feel like we're moving in the right direction with that.
Tell us a little bit about this Panela Mix. Now, we're sitting here, and just so you know, I'm sitting here there's a few boxes in front of me, very nicely packaged, very elegant. You know, you've clearly had someone designing this stuff for you, or was it you that designed it?
No, I had someone design it.
Okay. It looks, I mean, it's professionally done, and then inside there's like sachets of Panela, you know, it's a sugar product, right? Well, an unrefined, describe it to us. You would know better than me.
Sure, so let me first start off describing what Panela is,
yes.
And then I'll tell you the product that's based on it.
Uh-huh.
Panela is non-centrifugal sugarcane, which is different from turbinado sugar, like a lot of like sugar in the raw that uses turbinado sugar, obviously refined sugar. They're always like centrifuge, which is a spinning process that separates the molasses from the sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And in sugarcane, what a lot of people don't know is like the blackstrap molasses, which is incredibly healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Here, they usually feed it to animals. But I actually like to take a teaspoon every day.
Right.
In Panela, in non-centrifugal sugar, it keeps a part of the molasses, adding minerals and vitamins to the Panela, and that makes it so it has a lower glycemic index, and it doesn't spike your blood sugar as much as refined sugar.
Okay.
And so that's what Panela is. Now, Panela Mix, think of, if you're in the U.S., I'm sure you've heard of Crystal Light, or here in Bogota, they call it Clite.
Oh, Clite, yes.
Yeah. And so it's a powdered beverage mix, right? But it's more like an organic powdered beverage mix, you know, based on like the 1700s, because a long time ago, you know, sugar was made this way, you know, unrefined, non-centrifugal. It's a much simpler process.
So it's got none of the poisons in it. You know, the bad stuff.
Well, the percentage of sucrose in a lot of so-called raw sugar, refined sugar, turbinado sugar is like 99.8%.
Mm-hmm.
And the percentage of sucrose in panela is anywhere from 70 to 80%. So what happens is that allows for all like the minerals and vitamins to go in there. Mm-hmm. And it has much more balance.
Nice, nice. And this is going well. I see you've got passion fruit flavor. You've got red fruits flavor, like berries, I guess. And what's the other one?
Lulo,
which is...
It's like a green citrusy fruit when you open it up.
Orange on the outside, green on the inside. In English, it's referred to as Sharon fruit.
I didn't know that.
That's bizarre. No, that's where I can bet it. Because you've got, I know you're also selling freeze-dried uchuva. And I've learned from you today that those in English are known as golden berries. So we're on a par now. There's one for one. I can tell you a Sharon fruit, and you can tell me golden berries.
Can I give you one more really quick?
Go on then. Go on.
So a very popular fruit in the health market right now is mangosteen.
Yeah.
Mangostino, right?
Yes.
And then in the U.S. guayaba is guava, right? Feijoa is called guavastin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Guavastin. It's like a fish. Okay. Guavastin. I did not know that. So now you're better again. But then you should be because you're in this field. So who is, let's say, where are you, for those of us here in Bogota or in Colombia, where are you stocking this panela mix?
Sure. So we're getting it from a small town, and it's a co-op in between Villete y La Vega.
Mm-hmm. So just like an hour and a half outside of Bogota.
An hour and a half outside of Bogota.
Yeah.
I was really happy to meet them. They're great. They had their organic certification. We worked together on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is artisanal. So I'd say that, it's a group of maybe that do organic, maybe 50 to 60 farms.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I've gone there quite a bit. I'll probably go in there this weekend. It's different from a lot of conventional panela. It's organic panela. The main difference is when you have to filter out panela because a lot of mud, kind of like they call it mugre, but it's not really mud, but from like the molasses and mm-hmm. when you grind up the cane is there, and you have to filter this out.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of panela they're going to filter it out with some type of chemical, mm-hmm. right? Some type of chemical substance, but our panela is filtered with a type of bush. There's two different bushes and trees. One's called balsa, mm-hmm. the other's called guasimum. And I'll show you a picture of this. And they use that as the clarification agent in the process.
All
and
right.
It actually grows on the same farm.
And so now, and then the whole process is done, and I guess it's like, panela is ground up and mixed with but kind of like an actual concentrate from the passion fruit, and then you put it in the sachets. Is that more or less how it's made?
It's made with natural flavors, but they're not from the fruit. So let me explain. It's not an artificial flavor.
Yeah.
It's not a fruit flavor. It's using an identical flavor that has like a chemical composition that's exactly the same as the fruit.
Nice.
And yeah, long term we may look into the natural fruit, but it's just really difficult at this point.
And in Colombia a lot of these things don't exist yet to, the machinery, let's say, involved is not inexpensive. Now where can we find this to buy?
Sure.
In Bogota.
In Bogota, if you go to, I need to update it again, but I have at least like 22 on there. Yeah. If you go to panelamix.co.
Yeah, panelamix.co, okay.
And click on donde comprar,
yeah.
Where to buy. You'll see the list of all the stores in Bogota.
And then you've got them in Medellin as well?
Yeah, we're in three stores in Medellin. We're just starting out there.
But that would be a massive growth market. I mean, I can see that in the health food market. And as people are body beautiful in Medellin, I was there a few months ago now. I was there, and people... I felt like in some parts that I was in a U.S. suburb in El Poblado, in some of the more distant parts of El Poblado, where everyone was just in gym kit coming from the gym or going to the gym and then buying sort of health drinks on the way there. So I think there's a market there that you cannot ignore. But you've done this research.
I've done a little bit. I think so, and I'll just tell you because people ask me a lot of times, like, why don't you sell it in a bottle form? And so the first one was, well, I didn't really think of that. But now that you mentioned it, it is a good idea.
Yeah.
But, we only have three ingredients, right? Yeah. We have the natural fruit flavor, the panela, and citric acid.
Yeah.
So if you look on most drinks, like you look at Gatorade, right, which is kind of a competitor in a sense for like sport drinks, because we have a sport version that you can make just using water and ice. you know, they have tons and tons of ingredients. Mm-hmm. And what I realized, I kept a bunch of panela mix already made, and after 4 weeks, I smelled it, and it wasn't bad, but it starts to ferment.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, if we want to do a bottle drink, we'd have to add additional ingredients and preservatives so it doesn't ferment.
Which you wouldn't want to do. I mean,
well, it depends. You know, because if you go out to any trapiche is where they make panela, mm-hmm. right? They have something called guarapo, which is just fermented panela y limón. And it's pretty good.
That's a liquor.
That's a liquor, yeah. So that's not what worked.
It is pretty good, but it does give you a cracking headache the following day.
Yeah.
If you have too much on it.
Sure.
I don't know. I've had guarapo, but not from panela. I've had guarapo from pineapple.
Oh, yeah.
That was...
like a chicha.
Yeah. I lost weight afterwards, though. I mean, yeah, let's say, if that was the aim... then, you know, it surely came off in the correct manner. But no, so, I mean, this is fascinating. And, you mean, you must have so much energy just to, you know, keep going. Colombia's not the easiest place for this, you know. I know you've got the products, the small artisan, you know, farmers, panela producers, they're there, but the logistics in the country is not the easiest either. I mean, you know, how do you keep yourself upbeat in this business?
Well, you know, I'm not always upbeat, you know, like most of us. Maybe some of the listeners, you know, I go through my ups and downs. I try to stay really focused. You know, to do this, it's not easy. It's different from maybe having certain types of jobs, but you have to be really, really on. So there's, I'd say, first off, like, you got to stay healthy. You have to be okay with sacrifice. Yeah. And I don't mean sacrifice like I feel like I'm... disadvantage anyway, but you know, I have to make a lot of social sacrifices because it's something we have to be on a lot. And you know, whether it's, you know, self improvement outside of working, just reading, writing, you know, music, sports, whatever you need to do to get yourself on top, I try to be like 100% on to self development, and it gets tiring, but I think that's the only way. I really feel like in a business like this, where you're kind of an underdog, being not like a large company, you have to have everything working for you in your favor.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're very, very accurate there. Now, listen, and if I was based in the U.S. and I wanted some of this panela mix, would I have to buy it online on your website or on Amazon, or are you going to be stocking in the U.S. soon?
So we're launching, I'd say, about 6 weeks from now. And if you go to panelamix.com, which is .co is for Colombia, but .com, you sign up. You'll get an email once it's live online, and we should be in stores, a few stores in Atlanta and Miami or Broward County.
Oh, nice. No, but Miami's a big market, and of course then you're catering to a huge Hispanic market who are going to know what panela is.
Right, and my mission really is, I mean, yeah, it's great for like Colombians that are there and for the Latin market, but I really want to, like, one of the things with Bother of Foods is one of our goals is kind of I call it anthropology, which is just a fancy way for saying understand how it's used in one culture and bring it and kind of share it. So I'm going to share it with the quote-unquote gringos like myself, just the people there that maybe not have Latin American living experience or ancestry. So just there's so many more. I could go on and on about the amazing superfoods you find here in Colombia, Brazil, and in this region. And I just want to share those really cool exotic Andean superfoods with people in the U.S.
That's right. I mean, I wish you all the best with this. I mean, it's got to be tough. But if you get everything in order and you've got all of your, like, say, documentation correct for the FDA and all of that, I mean, there's no limit because people want natural. They want, you know, healthy. I mean, that's all I can say about it. They do. There's huge markets. You go out to California. Everybody's, you know, out there jogging, you know, going to the gym, rock climbing, cycling, hiking. And that's not just the outdoor states. I mean, it's the, you know, the winter states too. They're up there skiing or hill walking or whatever. I mean, there's a huge market. I mean, this pie is big enough for almost everyone. I say, you know, that'd be... So I wish you all the best with that. Now, you've had some good news recently, and you showed me the article. I wasn't here to see it, but you showed me it. And you were featured in El Tiempo, so the big national newspaper here in Colombia.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's pretty massive, you know, to be in that. I mean, that's the one, really.
Yeah, like, you know, listen, you have to, any type of press when you're starting out, you have to get. And even if that means a lot of visits and phone calls and taking people out to lunch, I think you have to do it, you know, until you're really set up, and I'm not there yet. So it was really nice coming out in El Tiempo. We got a really interesting set of calls. I wish I could say, yeah, like this, like Whole Foods called me, but there's more a lot of just people saying, hey,
who are you?
Do you want to talk about business, or I'd like to import into Europe? I'm like, really? No, actually, I'd like to export it from Chia, which is like an hour away. So just a lot of things like that. But anyway, it's been good. And, they sounded kind of like me before I started, or maybe even I have my own beginner moment still. But it was cool.
And, of course, on the back of that as well, for almost a year, so not just on El Tiempo, you are out there. I mean, people know who you are because you've also got the Food Startups podcast. It's you and another guy in Medellin.
Yeah, me and a guy named Danny Mikulicz.
Okay.
He's from New York, and he lives in Medellin. He's starting Talin Cacao, which is an excellent, excellent chocolate company. And so we started this podcast as a way to kind of learn about the food industry. You know, we're trying to, like, just, you know, from the web background, right? There's a lot of information that's shared for, like, Google AdWords, etc. It's pretty transparent. But, like, food startups and, like, importations and packaging, it's not transparent at all. It's the opposite, right? It's very opaque. And so we kind of wanted to share that, you know, our experience and share a lot of things that we can learn and bring on expert guests on the podcast. And we've also found it's a great way for networking because we've gotten some people from, you know, from eight-figure companies, to come on there. And obviously, if I, like, called them or emailed them, hey, you want to come out for coffee? They would never meet up with me. But because they get to talk about their company on the podcast, we've been able to, like, meet and learn from some really interesting people.
Also ask some questions that are pertinent to your business.
Yeah. Let's just say you're starting a panela company.
I think it's very good. Now, that can be found on iTunes, right?
Yeah.
So it's called the Food Startups Podcast. And you've done 38 some episodes. So, I mean, it's going really strong. And I think that's really cool. Now, so the websites that you need to look out for, folks, is what? PanelaMix.com.
Panela with PanelaMix. M-I-X.com.
And then your Valor Foods website is?
ValorFoods.com. Okay. ValorFoods.com.
Okay, perfect. And then the Colombian one for those here in Colombia?
Panela Mix, PanelaMix.co.
.co, perfect. And I imagine you're on Facebook and Twitter and all of those other things. We can find you if we just do a little rudimentary search. So if you want to find anything out about Matt Aaron and his ventures, you can either get in touch with me here at Columbia Calling. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com, or go through our website, columbiacallingradio.com, or, of course, you know, through any of those contact details that we have just now mentioned that are Matt's websites. But, of course, we're wishing him all the best. We wish you, you know, it's so much fun to hear about someone starting their own thing. You're going in alone. I mean, do you have any associates in this one, in Valor Foods, or is it, it's your...
In the U.S., it's my company. Yeah. And I have one person that helps me out part-time, and then in Colombia, I have two associates.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's really, you're out there alone. I mean, it's really a small...
It's a
small thing, and I would even venture, it's even smaller than saying it's a family-run business, because here in Colombia, families mean you have 12 brothers and sisters. You've got two associates with you. And are they Colombian, or are they...
They're Colombian.
They're Colombian. So they're the ones sort of helping you, I think, with a lot of the idiosyncrasies of Colombia here, some of the difficulties.
Sure.
Yeah. Because I personally would not have been able to have, you know, run my hotel for 7 years now, 8 years, God knows, without, you know, family or Colombians involved in it, you know, without them sort of ironing out those little issues that really make, you know, make my hair turn gray or fall out, which is, you know, terrible. So listen, from all of us here at Columbia Calling, thank you for your time and sharing this information with us, because it's really, you know, it's uplifting to hear about this kind of story. I mean, in the final minute and a half that we have, what do your family back in Maryland think of all of your projects down here?
You know, they're pretty supportive. They might think I'm, you know, a bit off or crazy on some of my ideas, but they've really been really supportive. Okay. I'm happy.
But they're going to be the number one buyers of Panela Mix.
They better be.
That's what I get all my family to download all of these podcasts, you know, drive it out. But anyway, no, that's not true. I don't know if my stepmother knows how to download it, but no, that's another story. Anyway, listen, thank you very much for being on the show. It's been a real pleasure having you here with us, and we wish you all the best in these future ventures, and shortly When I turn off here, I will try some panela mix, and so when I write this up and everything, and I will let the listeners know how panela mix was, and we will surely promote your business in the future. So this has been Columbia Calling with Matt Aaron from Maryland. I've been Richard McCall. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and tune in next week.